on Friday, the running joke was, has Russell Crowe replied yet?
You didn't believe me.
We
I could
Russell,
do it.
We said, Russell, we'd love to have you on the show.
I think you'll find I tweeted him.
Yeah. And guess what? Russell replied, Russell Crowe, good morning, sir.
How you doing, mate? You right?
We're good. How are you?
Pretty good. I timed that wrong because interrupting that song is a bad thing to do.
Oh, it's all right. We let it finish. Don't worry. We let it finish.
Always be played.
We always let our ballads sing to the play to the end.
So how are you?
I'm pretty good, man. Pretty good. Just in the bush in Australia on the farm. It's a beautiful blue sky day today in the middle of winter, but it's about 23, 24 degrees Celsius where I am.
Oh, wow.
We're supposed to be in the middle of summer and it's raining in 16 degrees, so, you know.
And we got soaked coming in this morning.
Luck for that.
Yeah. I actually wasn't too far from your house this time last year. I was in Whoopi.
In Woolgoga.
Yes, I couldn't say it, so I was told to say Whoopi. I kept saying Woolgoga.
Yeah, but we might give the tourists a break with that one, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So all my cousins were saying to me, Russell Crowe lives not too far from here. And I said, look, I'll be quicker getting him on Twitter.
So how'd you enjoy being down here? Did you have fun?
It was absolutely gorgeous. It was a trip of a lifetime. We actually discovered that my grandfather had a second family that we didn't know about. Well, we were actually the secret second family. And so we have relatives all over Australia. So we were like in Wangaratta, you know, Coffs Harbour, Evans Head, Evans Bay, maybe I got that wrong. And obviously Woolgoolga. So, yeah, it was fabulous. Wow, absolutely fabulous. Gorgeous.
Listen,
what was your grandfather's name?
Eric Jiggins. So there's loads of Jigginses not far from you.
Was his nickname Busy?
Yeah. He was busy. He was a seafarer.
Oh, he was. So he worked out of the Coffs Port or something, did he, as a fisherman?
Yeah. And he just family kind of there. And he's originally from London, but they all kind of moved to Australia. So, yeah, it was an incredible, you know, reunion. It was fantastic.
Oh, that's great. What an experience.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Well, next time I'll call in for a cup of tea.
How's things going with you guys? What's going on this morning on the radio? What are we looking at? What are we talking about?
Well, it's still the big story here, unfortunately, is still coronavirus. We've got some footage that came out of the weekend of people partying in a bar, which has upset an awful lot of people. Mm. And I guess it's probably the same the world over. It must be the same for you guys. I mean, you being out in the bush, it's probably not quite as prevalent as it is for big cities.
Yeah, well, we're pretty lucky where we are here. We've only had a couple of cases and, you know, there was a bunch of young people right at the beginning that weren't taking things seriously, but, you know, more easily done in the bush than in the big city. The community just kind of puts its foot down and then the young kids, you know, they get it, you know what I mean? So we've been lucky in that regard, but obviously you've heard the news coming out of Melbourne. Things have kicked off again down there, and now that's starting to bring about an increase in New South Wales and also in South Australia. They've had a few more cases as well. So, yeah, we're definitely not completely on top of things just yet, Danny.
No. And people are just being reckless. You see, there's no immunity. That's the problem. And obviously with younger people, as you said, they just kind of take risks.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a couple of simple things we've all got to do, right? Was the hand sanitizer, using face masks, and I know it feels alien and strange. You know, when things first got, became serious here, you know, I had to make a decision between going back to Sydney where my kids are and isolating with them or staying here where my parents are. Now, they're coming along in age. My mum's just turned 80, my dad's 84. So I talked to my boys and we made the decision. They stayed in Sydney so they could get Uber Eats. And I stayed up on the farm to look after their grandparents, you know, my mum and dad. And, you know, the first few weeks, you know, I did all the shopping and all that, which is that doesn't sound like a big deal for most people, but I'm 30 kilometres away from a supermarket or close to it, you know, and there's a number of different sort of family groups that actually live on the farm. So, you know, I just thought, well, if anybody's going to be at risk, I'll go and do it. My mum and dad were a little confused at first because, like a lot of people of their age, they've got early onset, this and that, you know.
Yeah.
And their little schedule there through the week, who they visit on the Tuesday, you know, where they go on a Thursday, is a big deal to them, you know. So getting them to change all that and seeing the seriousness of the situation, it did take a little bit of time.
Oh, of course,
you know, but you just got to do it. You got to look after the most vulnerable in your community first. And, you know, we can see through what's happening in Melbourne, for example, what's going through the aged care facilities. You've got to know it's super serious.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Just one little mistake in an aged care facility and pretty much everybody's at a high level of risk. So if you're listening and you're thinking that it's a good idea to keep going out and you're pushing against it, saying, you know, I don't want my life to change, you got to understand, you know, it's new for all of us. Mm-hmm. And we've all got to deal with it, you know.
Absolutely. And it was your mother's 80th recently, was it? I was just reading your Twitter there. You got a lovely orchestra in for her, string quartet.
Yeah, so it was her 80th on the 2nd of August. And I was trying to think of something special. And I actually heard through the grapevine that there's a local string quartet. And they hadn't been able to work since March because of the situation. So I got in touch with them. I said, look, you know, it's my mum's birthday. Would you come out and play? And they said, great. You know, so they did. And she loved it so much that, and I could see these kids just were into what they're doing as well. So I just made a deal with them. It's like, okay, well, every Sunday for the next month, come out and play for my mum. So you'll get a wage, you know, my mum will get the pleasure. And, you know, so, you know, you only turn 80 once, right? So you might as well make it a month-long celebration.
Absolutely. I mean, have your own personal string quartet for the month. That's fantastic.
Well, it's not my own personal one, but, you know, yeah. I mean, I probably, that's a good idea. I should pick up on that and I'll tell my mum it's hers. And I'll
she loved that.
They decided to name themselves after her or something. But I was actually, I was really amazed at the quality. I knew we had a conservatorium of music here in Coffs Harbour, but I'd never had the moment to go visit or see what they do. But the quality of what they play for us on weekends is so amazing. And, you know, it's kind of like a chapel service, you know, but without some sort of lecture or speech or sermon. You know, we just go into the chapel and we all just sort of individually meditate in our own way while we're listening to beautiful music, you know, and I find it's great for me because it gives me an opportunity just to sit still for a minute and be grateful for all the wonderful things I have in my life and how lucky I've been, and particularly for the safety and health of the people I love, you know.
Gorgeous. My dad is 80 in 2 years, so he'll be lucky if he gets a CD in the Dubliners.
I hope he's not listening today.
He'll know.
Might have the bar too high.
Yeah, yeah. You're putting pressure on the rest of us here, Russell. Thanks.
Sorry, mate.
Can we talk about this incredible movie of yours, Unhinged? It's relentless.
You had a chance to see it yet?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Just... I was like a hen on a hot grill watching that.
Right, it's pretty full on.
My God. Yeah. And I went to see it on my own.
Oh, dear. Oh,
it's a bad idea.
It's a bit of a harsh watch if you're there seeing it by yourself, but so obviously you've still got some, you know, theatres open there. I did actually hear that as well. And it's cool. I mean, I'll warn you, if you're listening at home, it's a harsh watch. You've got to be ready for it. You've got to pull your pants up and be ready for it because it's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I started thinking about when I first read it is that these moments of ultra-violence where people, you know, particularly in America, but really all across the Western world, where people just decide, you know, enough is enough for that, you know, individual, and they're going to stand up and start to wreak devastation and destruction. It just seems to be happening more and more. And this is a sort of film that just puts that onto the breakfast table for discussion. It's, you know, sometimes, you know, just like we were just talking about with the coronavirus situation, you know, you got to take a different tack if things aren't working, you know. And at the moment, we seem to have built ourselves up from a community perspective, particularly readable on social media, where everybody feels they have this right to have this very angry response to everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And that has its own energy, and it's not necessarily a good energy, you know? And you just got to be mindful, that old cliche, right? We never know the wars that the next person's going through.
Absolutely.
So when you feel like, you know, you can hit somebody with a sledgehammer, particularly, you know, with your voice or your attitude and stuff like that, you might just want to, like, take a beat. Take a little bit of pause. You don't know what that person's actually dealing with.
Yeah. How do you prepare for a rollout? Because it's, there's no real redeeming qualities to the man. And I love the fact that he didn't get a name. I know he gives a name in one scene, but he doesn't really have a name. But how do you prepare for something like that?
Yeah, it's funny, because I've played, you know, my share of villains in the past. Mm-hmm. I've played a bunch of heroes and stuff as well, but you know, when you play a villain, a lot of the time they tend to be more complicated as characters. You know, you have quite a bit of a substructure underneath them, and they have motivations and et cetera, like the thing I did for TV recently, The Loudest Voice, about a fellow called Roger Ailes, who, you know, a lot of people see as a bad guy, but he had a very complicated life, and he was, you know, a father and a husband and a mentor and an inspiration to people, and obviously a very successful businessman with setting up Fox News and what have you. But what he was also doing behind the scenes that people couldn't see was actually quite monstrous. So he was quite a complicated character. But as you say, this guy is just blunt trauma. He's just blunt force. So it's really what you don't have to lean back on in a character like this is actually a difficult thing. Because, you know, you don't make it in 90 minutes. It takes a number of months to actually make, and you've got to keep that similar energy and that similar drive for the character going. So, yeah, it was a little bit difficult in that regard for me because I'm used to playing characters that are a little bit more colorful. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's fresh ground for me, and I actually enjoyed the process very much with the director. We had a great crew on that set. So it was, you know, funnily enough, you look at the movie and it's so fraught with tension. So you might imagine that the set was similar, but it was completely different. The set was very cruisy. We shot it in New Orleans. It was summertime. The sun was out. You know, we did have a little tail end of a hurricane to deal with. We shut it down for a week. But, you know, it's pretty regular around those parts. But, yeah, I mean, the effect of the film, I think, is you know, that's the end result. You know, mm-hmm. people are talking about it. People are getting freaked out by it. And in a funny way, it's kind of relieving a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. That's what I get from people, you know. They go into that room that they've spent their life going to, you know, in terms of the theater experience. And mm-hmm. finally, for the first time for them, what feels months or a long, long time, they're getting to see a movie where all the crazy stuff is just happening on the screen, not actually in their own life, which is what it feels like for all of us.
I know, they could hear me. Situation. They could hear me out in the lobby, I think, when I went to see it. Just hopping off the chair. I was watching it through my fingers. I was like, oh God, this is never going to end. And it's funny you should say that it was quite a calm set, because I would have thought it was just nonstop energy, so much adrenaline. But you certainly don't get that. You just think, God, he must be exhausted playing that role. It was terrifying to watch, but brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Well, it was funny for me, because usually your setup for work is not ideal in my job. You know, you'll be off shooting in some far-flung location, and where you're accommodated is, you know, an hour's drive away and all of this sort of stuff. But it just ended up that I got a house literally within a 9-minute bike ride from the studio.
Oh, nice.
So it was so easy for me. Yeah. I would just get on a bicycle. I'd go right out and ride to work every day in the New Orleans sunshine. You know, what are we doing today? Oh, we're going to crush the police car with a cement truck. You know, we just get on with doing it, you know.
We're going on a rampage. Yeah.
Can I just mention another one of your movies that is my favourite film of yours, which is The Nice Guys. I love it. It's just...
Cool. Thanks very much, man.
I think for me, it's almost a perfect storm of a movie. The script is very funny. The cast are terrific. It felt like just a nice, light-handed direction. The soundtrack is great. And it just, the chemistry between you and Ryan Gosling is just superb. Love that.
That kid makes me laugh, man. I tell you, you know, there's not a lot of people who can distract me on a film set. You know, I pretend to have that reputation. You know, the building could be falling down and I'm still doing my dialogue, you know. But Ryan, for whatever reason, his particular sense of humor just tickles my fancy, as they say. And he can get me. We have a phrase in the theater world, you guys probably know it, if you laugh on stage or if you laugh, you know, in front of the camera, it's called corpsing, you know. Because essentially, you've killed it, haven't you? You've killed the show, you've killed the shot, because you've just laughed inappropriately. That guy, there's actual footage online you can find of when we're doing the scene in the elevator, and the director is yelling out, "Ryan, for God's sake, just let him do the dialogue."
But he pulls these funny expressions as well, which just probably make you erupt into laughter. You know, he's got these...
Well, he's just a superb comedic actor. You know, he's known for other work, obviously, but holy hell, man. And the thing is, when you talk to him, you realize that he's a big fan of a lot of different comedians over time, but for one example, if you know the movie, you know, there's that point where he's rolled down the hill and he's trying to light his cigarette, and we can see that behind him is a dead body, you know. And his response when he actually works out that there's a dead body there, it's like classic Abbott and Costello. It's like nobody's been able to sustain a moment like that. Nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. All he's unable to light a cigarette, and he's unable to call out my name. But, man, that's got to be 50 seconds of the funniest stuff you'll ever see.
Yeah, it is. And that's not to take away from some of the amazing roles you've played, but just that movie for me, I say it's almost a perfect storm of a movie. I just love it to bits. It's terrific.
I have to say mine is A Beautiful Mind. I love that. I love Jennifer Connelly, but I just thought the film itself, all the twists and turns and how it just wraps up in the end, the understanding, you know, the understanding himself and understanding the love, you know, conquers all. Yeah. I just thought it was absolutely beautiful. You know, you are all my reasons. Yes. I love it. Absolutely gorgeous.
That script, when I read it was funny. I was in Austin, Texas in the year 2000, I think it was. I was there with a band I used to be in. We were doing really sold-out shows at a venue called Stubbs Barbecue. And it was really kind of like a turning point for me because I'd been playing in bands for a long time at the same time as making films, but then suddenly the films became a bigger thing, you know. Mm. And I was sent that script, and I was in the rock and roll mode. You know, I had shows to do, and I was really happy about that, and I really didn't want to read the script. But it arrived, and the fellow whose company that wanted to do it, you know, he called me personally, so I told him I would, you know. And it was a sort of summer's night, and it was one of the few nights we weren't actually in the studio on stage. I just sat out the back of this house, you know, probably about 8:30, 9 o'clock, I started reading it, and but it was a warm, warm Texas night, so you'd be sitting outside in, you know, shorts and a t-shirt, and it was easy, you know. And I just got taken up with it, and I was like, there's absolutely no way in the world anybody else is getting to play this role except me. It was such a fantastic film.
Something extraordinary is possible. I actually...
But, you know, that's the thing. It's like every bit, you know, sometimes you talk and somebody's taken a script that was, you know, sort of partially there. I mean, I'll give you an example. It's Gladiator. You know, we didn't have a script, really. We didn't really have the story that you see on screen. That isn't what we started with. That
yeah, I read this.
Kind of constructed as we went, you know. But with Beautiful Mind, it's the opposite. That script by Akiva Goldsman was so perfect. Mm. And all of the elements that were in that script, Ron Howard has managed to translate on screen. The way the movie starts, and you're thinking it's something, and you start to follow him, and you're supporting him, and then you realize, oh my God, every single thing I've seen so far has been his imagination. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That trick was in the script.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And it just hit you like a slap when it happened. It was like, you're serious, you know?
And that's exactly how it comes across on screen. It's just an incredible, incredible film. I love it. It's my favourite, definitely. But there's a whole string of fantastic work there by you.
You mentioned Jennifer Connelly. You know, I've been married to that girl twice. Mm, John Nash. And she was also my wife, pre-biblical, as Noah.
Of course.
Yeah. She's one of the greatest actresses. You know, she's just, you know, obviously she works all the time, so she's not really what you'd say underrated, but she's very unsung. Mm-hmm. She's one of the great actresses of her time.
Yeah.
And any opportunity that comes up for me and her to work together or get married a third time, then I'm for it.
Excellent. Russell, we could keep you here all day talking, but unfortunately...
Will you be back in Dublin anytime soon, Russell?
Well, I hope so. You know, it's a favorite. It's become a favorite place of mine to be. And the thing is, I just don't know it very well yet. You know, I've only been, if you add it up, I've been to Dublin, I think, four times, probably for no more than a total of about 14 or 15 days.
Right.
So I'm slowly getting to know. If I walk out the door of this hotel and turn left, I get to there. If I turn right, I get to there. You know, but I haven't really put the city together yet, but... Mm. Every experience I've had in Dublin, I've loved. You know, I love being there with the Late Late Show and Ryan and those boys are great, you know. I've got, you know, a few people, Anton Savage, I like to say hello to when I'm in town. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, there's some good people in that city, and I really enjoy that place.
Excellent. Well, you see, you'll have to come into Q102 now the next time and have a cup of tea. We can give you a Q102 mug, because I know you collect the coronation cups and you have the whole set there. But we'll give you a Q102 mug, Russell.
You'll just have to give me a map and I'll see if I find it on my travels.
Excellent. Russell, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking time out. Really appreciate it.
Yes, all the very best.